The Nerdcast Empire is on the air. Happy Monday, everyone. It's Monday, March the 31st, the final day of March 2025, and we are here for the Monday edition of the Nerdcast News Report. I am Matt in the studio. Great to have you along with us. And we've got the beginning of what is going to be a pretty big week in the gaming industry. So we're going to start off this morning's Nerdcast News Report with kind of one final preview of what is going to be a very large Nintendo Direct coming up on Wednesday. We're also going to talk about a recent survey from Japan that talks about the top anime for teenagers, and maybe a little bit of a surprise at some of the shows on that list. And we mentioned a few weeks ago that there were a couple of big signature events that we'd like to see show up at SakaiCon. The first was announced a week or so ago, and we got the second over the weekend, and we'll talk about that coming up. Then we'll wrap things up with the Empire Express. Joining me in studio on this Monday morning is Mike. Mike, how's it going?
It's going. Things are really starting to heat up. Obviously, we got the Switch 2 Direct coming up this week. We have kind of convention season kicking off with SakaiCon in a couple weekends. It's a lot of news to go over, and definitely excited about it.
Yeah, it's going to be, maybe not a ton of breaking news this morning, just because a lot of what we're talking about is stuff that is pretty well known at this point. But at the same time, we do want to kind of take this opportunity to kind of preview one final time what we think is going to happen this Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific, when Nintendo does have that Direct that they've been advertising for really a couple months now. And everybody's been speculating. There have been leaks that have dropped. There's so much out there. I mean, several did. Nintendo Life did a story about what they would like to see, and their editors and writers kind of went through. There was a Reddit thread with somebody talking about different things they want to see. And like I said, we've heard some rumors of titles that are going to drop, of different features. Are you going to be able to hook your Switch 1 to your Switch 2 and make a dual screen setup? Obviously, it's a little bit bigger. The Joy-Cons hook in a little bit differently. Those are kind of things we already knew. There's a lot of things that are, educated guesses at this point. And obviously all the questions are going to be answered, or at least we believe they will be, on Wednesday. But as you look forward to this Direct on Wednesday, kind of what's your mindset, your anticipation for what we're going to see on Wednesday?
Yeah. So the obvious stuff right out of the gate, we're talking price point. We're talking when the pre-orders are going to go live, probably the packaging, kind of what all you're getting with the system itself. I think we'll see that. As far as games go, I'm excited about whatever we may get there. But I think first and foremost, and it's kind of what makes Nintendo different than the other console companies, is that you're really kind of anxious to see what kind of weird crap the system can do. Obviously you have the extra USB-C port, you have the mysterious C button that we're still not totally sure what it does yet. There's a lot of speculation around that. The Joy-Cons have mouse scrolling functionality. I'm kind of curious if they'll show practically what that looks like in one of their games. That could be really cool. And the thing about Nintendo is there's always some sort of gimmick, and I feel like they've been thinking about this ever since the Switch launched, like, hey, what will we do next time around? So I think it builds a lot of excitement around it. Obviously, if they do some sort of side by side with a current game showing the performance enhancements between Switch 1 and Switch 2, I think that would be really cool. Then as far as games go, I'm assuming probably a new 3D Mario game. That seems like a very likely thing. I'd like to see some other Nintendo first party property get something new, maybe something you're not quite expecting, something they haven't revisited in a while as far as a new game, like an F-Zero, Star Fox, Kid Icarus. I think that would be really cool. And then from there, it comes down to what kind of third party games are they ready to announce? I mean, do we get some stuff from Square Enix, like a Final Fantasy VII remake, Final Fantasy 14 or 16? We know Microsoft is kind of shopping around their IPs to other consoles now, so there's speculation that we might get like Halo Master Chief Collection or Flight Simulator. Those are kind of the big things I'm anxious to find out. And honestly, among all of them, like I mentioned before, when does the pre-order go live? When can I go ahead and get my Get my Switch pre-ordered.
And the big rumor has been that the pre-orders are going to go live on Wednesday. We've seen leaks from Best Buy Canada and some other places that have already basically got it up on their website ready to go. Now, that could be a placeholder just with them saying, hey, let's go ahead and put this up there. And then if they say we can start selling it on Wednesday, we can, we've, the page is up, it's ready to go. We can start taking pre-orders maybe before anybody else. So that could be speculative, but there have been other rumors that this thing could be on the market by the middle of May and not June, which was kind of the original timeline, just kind of lining up with some of the other releases that Nintendo has done. So I think that's a big part of it. I think there are, obviously, we just had the Direct last week. I think a lot of those games that were announced for that are probably also going to be Switch 2, or they could just use a Switch 1 and make, because again, we're going to have the backward compatibility.
Yeah.
But they could also decide to make, if there are some of them that maybe are more graphical,
a dedicated Switch 2 version. Yeah,
correct. And I think there are also other big titles that we're going to see, you know, the best versions of, if they've been on Switch before or just on Switch for the first time. A lot of your EA Sports games, a lot of other major titles that, you know, these developers have avoided the Switch just because they were underpowered and they didn't want to deliver fans a kind of a less than ideal performance. Now, at least as far as we know, this new Switch 2 is going to be able to handle all those games to a point. I mean, I'm sure there's the most ridiculous games out there that maybe it won't be able to handle, but I think for the most part, it's going to be able to play everything, which kind of puts it back on par with the other consoles. And, you know, you have to start wondering, like, how many more consoles are we going to get? Because we are kind of getting to that point where people were, you know, Microsoft has already kind of lined up the ability to play your Xbox stuff on your PC, kind of in mind that maybe someday, instead of releasing a new Xbox console, it's just all going to be done through your PC. So this feels like a big event, obviously, for Nintendo, but it also feels like a big event for the industry, because you just don't know how many more of these we're going to have where you're actually going to have some sort of physical console to play your games on.
Yeah, you do kind of feel like it's on Nintendo to basically keep the concept of a standalone gaming device relevant. And obviously they have the first party lineup that kind of gives them the leverage to say, no, you still need to buy a Nintendo, because that's where you're going to get Link and Mario and Kirby and Smash. And, you know, the other companies don't really have that. And now we've even seen where streaming services are getting into gaming, where, you know, every day Crunchyroll's telling me some new game that they've added that you can stream from their application. And Netflix has a gaming division. It's clear that there's a segment of the industry that's saying, let's get away from hardware. Let's do it all streaming through an app. And, you know, again, it takes us farther away from ownership, which bothers me. But I think as long as Nintendo keeps coming out with really great first party properties and gimmicky ways to make you have to own their hardware, I think they're good. I wonder what we're talking about a couple years down the road, when we're kind of in the middle of the Switch 2's lifespan. What does ownership look like? What are Sony and Microsoft doing at that point in time? It'll be interesting, but yeah, you kind of have to hitch your wagon to Nintendo to some degree, because they still seem committed to the console.
One other rumor that Game Rant's been really good about reporting these rumors, kind of collecting them. So kudos to them. We use them as a source a lot. Certainly want to shout those guys out. One of the rumors was talking about basically like a three-phase launch for the Switch 2, where you're going to have obviously the initial console with your initial games that are going to come out, and whether that's May or June, we'll find that out on Wednesday. And then basically two more waves of titles that will come out maybe October for wave two, and then right around your holiday Christmas season for wave three, that kind of, you know, that way you're not hitting your fans with all of this all at once, because obviously you don't want to put people in a position where they feel like they have to buy everything and maybe they end up, you know, freezing and not buying anything. So you give them a little bit, and then you give them a little more, and then you give them a little more, and hopefully they'll be able to afford all of that. So I won't be surprised to see that as well.
Yeah. And I think that's strategic too, in the case of you've been using your Switch or Switch OLED for years, you're totally happy with it. Maybe it's not this first push with the Switch 2 that really entices you to upgrade, but, you know, 3 or 4 months down the road, when the next slate of games comes out, you're like, wait, now maybe's the time to pull the trigger, and basically just keep doing that. And even if that means you're waiting till the holiday season to pick up your Switch 2, over that period of time, they've now slowly drip fed you enough reasons where, yeah, you have to go ahead and upgrade.
And the other thing that'll be interesting to see is how much, if at all, we see a markdown on the original Switch. Because again, we've, as we stated last week, they had that Direct. They're still releasing games for the Switch. There's still a ton of games to play for the Switch. So it's not like that console is immediately going to be obsolete. So for people that maybe don't want to pull the trigger on a Switch 2 for cost reasons or whatever, this may be the perfect time to get in the door and get your hands on a Switch for a reasonable price and potentially get some bundles to go with it that really kind of give you a good value for picking up a new system.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the portability of the Switch certainly still makes it viable, too. Maybe you don't want to take your Switch 2 out on the road with you because it's brand new and more expensive. There's that. I think obviously the backward compatibility gives you the mindset that even though the Switch 2 is going to be coming out, the Switch doesn't immediately become a dead console. There still will be games. There's no reason for them to not keep making games for it for now just because of the market penetration it has. So, yeah, it would be cool to see what kind of bundles and deals we might end up getting on it. And, you know, may not be a bad idea to pick up another one. I don't know. We'll see.
You've got a couple already. I've got one. So it took me a while to get into the market for the Switch, but I love my Switch. And certainly it's a great pickup. And I think, again, going to be an opportunity for people that want to get the Switch 1 that maybe aren't ready to jump into the Switch 2. Anything else of note before we jump on to our next topic?
You know, it's funny. I've been looking at the Nintendo Today app, which was a big thing they announced in the last Nintendo Switch Direct. And every day there's like a new little clip of the original Switch 2 video that they released, kind of telling you, hey, 3 more days till Direct, 2 more days till Direct. It's kind of nifty. But yeah, I'm just anxious to find out more now.
Yeah, and we will on Wednesday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. The tentative plan right now, as long as our schedule works out, is we will be pushing back our news podcast till Wednesday afternoon so that we can kind of digest the Direct and get all the information, then bring it to you and give you our analysis on Wednesday afternoon. So check out the Direct Wednesday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern, and then catch us in the afternoon. We'll give you the exact time as we get a little bit closer, as we will break down everything you need to know from that Direct on Wednesday afternoon. Let's jump to some other news headlines. And again, just some smaller stuff today. This is from CBR, which is actually citing Oricon US, which I honestly did not know existed until this article, which is kind of cool. But the streaming platform Abema revealed their top 5 most popular Abema anime among teen boys and girls on their TikTok account. And I think I was a little surprised at some of the shows on this list, but the number one show, maybe most surprising in some ways, was ReZero. And not to say that ReZero is a bad show. Obviously, you've watched it and really enjoy it, and a lot of people have. But it seems a little interesting that this is the top show for teenagers. I think you had the same thought as well.
Yeah, I guess, and I certainly don't make any claims that I understand what teens are into in the year 2025, but clearly, this is why we see so many isekai shows still, is that kind of subgenre of anime is still hitting a note with people. You know, the show's good. I'm impressed that it's kind of maintained this level of popularity, given the gap we had between seasons 2 and 3. To me, it hurt my interest in the show a little bit jumping back into it, because a lot of my feelings were like, okay, I remember that character, but why do I care about that character? Why do I care about this character? To me, it felt like the story was a little all over the place because of my own lack of ability to remember everything. But I think like characters like Amelia, Rim, and Rom are really popular and have been. So I think that certainly helps. The witches cult villains are pretty cool too. So, I mean, maybe I could see that appealing to teenagers, but yeah, I don't know what I was expecting to be number one, but it wasn't necessarily ReZero.
The other top 5 choices you saw on the screen, if you're watching on our video podcast, The Apothecary Diaries was number 2, Sakamoto Days number 3, Orb on the Movements of the Earth number 4, and Solo Leveling number 5, which, I mean, again, a lot of big titles there, so yeah, that's not terribly surprising. I do wonder in some of these cases, like with it being a poll on TikTok, like, how many of these shows are popular on TikTok, whether it's memes, whether it's clips of the shows, things like that. That's what's driving a lot of the young viewers, or just young anime fans getting into these shows that, you know, like ReZero, obviously people have talked about that for years. Maybe they just thought, well, I'm going to get into this show and they really like it. And yeah, I honestly didn't know what to expect as far as this list, but I ReZero being on the list didn't surprise me. Being number one, maybe a little, I would have guessed, you know, Solo Leveling, Sakamoto Day, something that's like
Solo Leveling certainly to me would have made the most sense to be number one.
It's current, it's hot, it's hip, kind of, you know, everything that, you know, maybe the kids would want. But yeah, I mean, I was a little bit surprised by that, but
yeah, kind of going down the list, I think number two, Apothecary Diaries. That's interesting. I've watched of it so far is good, but it's just like show takes place in like ancient imperial China. It's about this servant girl who happens to know a lot about poisons and medicines. It doesn't strike me as like, man, the kids are going to love this one, but you know, apparently they do.
And you see the comments there talking about one of the characters being soothing and plot twists evidently being a thing that caught their attention. So,
okay. Sakamoto Days, to me, that show feels like something that should be on Adult Swim. Yeah. I think it's got a lot of just mass appeal. You know, there are people who were kind of not fond of it. I think kind of the hardcore fans because they felt the animation was kind of substandard. But to me, it's more of a comedy than it is a serious action show. So the animation doesn't really faze me.
Yeah.
You know, you have Sakamoto as this legendary assassin who's retired and married with a kid running a convenience store, ends up hiring like his former kind of protege, who's this clairvoyant assassin, and also hires this former mafia princess. They kind of end up becoming like a de facto family of their own. It's funny at times. It's interesting. You know, the characters got kind of wild abilities because they're all like assassins, but you know, I'm shocked this isn't like a big Adult Swim show.
Yeah.
Orb I've not watched, so I've heard good things, but it didn't really jump out at me as something I needed to spend time on. And as for Solo Leveling, to me, that's kind of the big modern action show. I think it's you know, when people our age had Dragon Ball Z that really got them into it, I feel like Solo Leveling kind of has the same properties. you got the weak character who becomes super ridiculously strong. The current season feels kind of like Hunter x Hunter as far as you got these people fighting ants, basically. very, very Chimera ant arc like. And then you kind of got the international side of it where you have the hunters from Korea, the hunters from Japan, and I assume at some point America is going to get involved too, and there's obviously tensions between those groups. It'll be interesting to see where it goes, but show's super interesting, and definitely I'm not surprised that it's popular really with anybody.
Yeah, for sure. And again, a lot of big shows on this list, and certainly some options if you're looking for the next big show to check out. But yeah, these are the shows that evidently are popular with the teens, at least the Abama shows. Obviously didn't count all anime, but among their shows, those are the top five, which is kind of interesting, a little bit surprising as well. Last story, and again, not a big long story, but one we've been anticipating quite a bit. The news broke over the weekend that Anime Hell, which is, you know, when it's good, when it's bad, sometimes it's also good. It is coming to SakaiCon, coming up on April the 12th, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. It was a staple of OhioCon for many years. The first one we walked out of because we just didn't get it. And it probably just wasn't good because that's kind of the nature of Anime Hell. Sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not, yeah. But you kind of have to go regardless. When it's good, it's amazing. The classic clips from that show are just so funny. And the next year we went and loved it. And then it kind of became a staple of our anime going experience. It also went away just like the Kick Punch Guap guys did as things moved on with OhioCon. And now, as we kind of anticipated, once Kick Punch Guap dropped in, that we would see Anime Hell close behind, because you know, the guy that's behind it, who goes by the name of Rich Lather, which is still hilarious, has been kind of an active member of the Discord for SakaiCon before it kind of got locked down. So not shocking, but really exciting news, certainly for us, but I think for any anime fans that are wanting to check out SakaiCon.
Yeah, I think pretty early on we identified kind of the two big panel groups or panels in general that to me were kind of the anchors of OhioCon. There were years where I didn't really care about the guests. It was really more about the game show and the Kick Punch Co-op group and then Anime Hell. Yeah. And, you know, I I'm curious because they both kind of dropped out of OhioCon pretty early on when things took a turn. I just wonder if there was any kind of effort on OhioCon to try to reconcile with them, because to me, all of the things being equal, which they're not, but if they were, I would go to the convention that these guys are at,
yeah.
Whether it was, you know, both the Anime Hell group and Kick Punch Co-op. And I don't know if OhioCon really, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but to me, I don't think OhioCon really understood the value that they add, yeah, to the convention. You can go see guests anywhere, anytime. And ultimately it's kind of the same song and dance with them. They're not providing new content when they show up. They're just there to run panels about how to be a voice actor and for autographs or whatever, which I know a lot of people are into. But to me, over the years, I've gotten a lot more invested in the people who create fan panel content for my enjoyment. And there's no two better than what we see now at SakaiCon. I think if things go well, these could basically be the linchpin events for this convention and kind of oversee its growth for years to come.
For sure. And I think the voice actor guests that they've had that I've enjoyed the most are the ones that actually do provide content, whether it's, you know, dubbing panels where people can, yeah, get up and dub shows, or Chris Ayers used to run the Mock Combat for Cosplay. Of course, the late Chris Ayers, yeah, legend, you know, where it was something more than just getting up and talking. It's like, here's something interactive that you're going to get. It's going to, yeah, be fun. Like, yeah, again, these two groups are we were going to OhioCon for a lot of years for these two events, these two groups, when we really weren't going for any other reason other than, yeah, just to have a reason to get out of the house in January. And the fact that they're going to be at SakaiCon, I mean, like I said, had I known that this was going to be the case, I would have certainly changed my schedule that weekend. But I will get a chance to see this, thankfully, because it's late night on Saturday, so I'll be able to get up there in time to see it. But definitely, if you were on the fence about SakaiCon, these two events should put you over the top, and you should go and get a badge right away and go see these events. You won't be disappointed. These two groups, I should say, because obviously Kick Punch Co-op will have several events over the, yeah, weekend. But to me, hopefully it's the thing. And obviously SakaiCon has had a lot to overcome this year. And I think, you know, their attendance in year one may be down a bit just because they haven't been able to promote the convention, and they're kind of trying to make up for lost time now. But hopefully these two groups being announced kind of at the end is going to be that last push to get them a nice attendance for this year, because people need to go and see this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know what kind of attendance they were really expecting, but I think for the attendee, it's great because you get to show up kind of on the ground floor.
Yeah.
Be a part of something from year one. I think that's always exciting. And as a result, you're probably going to get a pretty good experience, because that first year, it probably won't be super heavily attended.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think it's going to be a fun event and really excited. We will have more kind of legal news probably next week, because I believe next week is when they're going to have the next court date in the lawsuit. So we'll keep an eye out for that. And if we have any more news to report on that front, we'll pass that along. It'll probably be not this coming week, but the following week. Just about ready to wrap this one up, ready to end with the Empire Express.
Let's do it.
On SmackDown Friday, WWE announced we'll be inducting matches into the Hall of Fame for the first time this year. The first choice will be Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from WrestleMania 13. Is that the right choice?
It's a great choice. Can't argue with that. There are a lot of great contenders out there, but they're calling it the Immortal Moment inductee, which makes me wonder, was Austin Hart really their first choice, or do you think they initially planned for this to be a Hogan match, Hogan Rock, Hogan Andre, but they pivoted when they realized that the fan support for Hogan just isn't there any longer.
Yeah.
It really makes you wonder.
It's possible.
The other Lucha brother now has a debut date. Rey Fénix, who was finally released from AEW a couple weeks ago, will debut on SmackDown this week. Excited for his debut?
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they do with him. Penta has been a huge hit on Raw. They've gotten him over. He's wildly popular. And now, you know, I think the thing that even AEW fans who I've seen posting about this are maybe excited about is the fact that these two guys seemingly will get a chance to do this on their own for a little bit and establish themselves as single stars. I think that's great for both of them. That's something AEW should have absolutely done. They dropped the ball on But yeah, excited to see what they do with Rey Fénix. Dragon Ball Evolution has finally been dethroned. The movie adaptation of the classic anime was the lowest rated movie on IMDb, but it has been surpassed by the live action Snow White. Well, we'll leave the reasons for Snow White's low score to other podcasts. Are you happy that Dragon Ball Evolution is finally not last?
You know, it's crazy because if you compare the two, Dragon Ball Evolution scored low because it tried to create something that appealed to the largest possible audience.
Yes.
And in doing so, they alienated the only people who were ever probably going to see it to begin with. So similar ultimate results, but different paths to get there. That being said, I'm really happy for the cast, who I thought were all good, despite the movie itself not being very good.
They didn't have much of a chance there.
Also on SmackDown on Friday, we found out that the main event of Night 1 of WrestleMania would be, as we expected, Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins versus CM Punk in a triple threat match. No surprise, right?
No surprise. Three of the biggest stars in the company, and honestly, if anybody but Cody Rhodes was the world champion, those two, three might be main eventing night two instead of night one. No offense to anybody else. And it does set up an issue where WWE's got to stop saying that the Royal Rumble winner is the main event of WrestleMania.
The whole card's the main event.
Well, the whole card's the main event. And it is, but it's like, you're getting a title shot. That's the thing you win at the Royal Rumble. Yeah. And they need to just start selling it that way. One of the first breaking stories on the Nintendo Today app on Friday was the news that the live-action Legend of Zelda movie will open worldwide on March 26, 2027. Is this good news or maybe not so good news?
You know, it's way too early to know how to feel about this, to be totally honest. But if nothing else, this will be great news for any entertainment content creators because there will be no shortage of hot takes and over analysis to be done between now and 2027. And I get the feeling that the people out there viewing it will eat it all up.
Yeah, for sure. And when it comes to creating stuff for content, we're all about it because that gives us stuff to talk about here on the Nerdcast News Report. And that is going to wrap things up for this Monday. You're all set to start your week on this last day of March. We'll be back on Wednesday in the afternoon, I believe it will be, as we talk about the Nintendo Direct, which will be coming up Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Friday morning, we should be back at our normal time at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. And then, of course, on Sunday, the latest episode of the Hard Rock Empire with the music of March 21st. If you haven't checked out last night's episode, please go do that. Really a lot of fun. We dropped that last night. You can catch it on demand on both Twitch and YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Big thanks to Mike in the studio. Big thanks to everyone who joined us live or wherever you joined us on the VOD. We really do appreciate that. We'll be back on Wednesday afternoon with another episode of the Nerdcast News Report. Until then, don't forget to join the Empire, the Nerdcast Empire.